You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from San Francisco. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks much, Jim, for inviting me on. It's always a pleasure. And yes, I'm in San Francisco, headed back to Florida on Sunday.
The stock market, it sets record highs every week, almost every day. Is this jolly rally going to continue?
Forever, yes. No, actually, I'm just kidding. It's pretty sick, really. And I think there's a pretty strong consensus out there that the market is plumb loco crazy out of its mind. But that comes with a probably universal expectation at this point that the big collapse is going to come after the first of the year. So I am bracing for a surprise whereby the market would crash before the first of the year. In other words, over the next couple of weeks.
So Santa's already come, and now we have to decide what to do with all the presents we don't like?
Right, that's right. This market is one big Christmas necktie, and we'll have to decide. I don't think the decision is terribly hard. You see that T-bills are yielding in the neighborhood of, depending on 60 or 90 day, they're over 4%, 4.15 up to, I think it's 4.6 something, 4.5. So it's not a difficult decision if you consider safety important, which I certainly do right now.
How would you describe the behavior on the stock market right now? It appears there's absolutely no fear.
Right. It's really a lunatic market. That's reflected in the very low premium levels for S&P put options. They're probably as cheap as they've ever been historically, and that reflects a great deal of complacency. But it does make one thing predictable, and that is nobody's going to get to buy those cheap puts. They're cheap because nobody wants them, and that suggests that we're going to have such a wrenching initial move down that those puts are going to go right to the moon from the start, and they're going to be repriced at levels where nobody wants to buy them. So it's the nature of the markets, really, that we're not all going to get short at the top.
Now, you say there's also a lot of complacency. People think this is going to go forever. Trump is such a positive influence. Is that a correct way of thinking, or a false way, or no thinking?
Well, it's understandable thinking, because Trump will definitely be create a much more favorable climate for small business. And there are a lot of good things that will come with the Trump presidency. But it's been overdone somewhat, and Trump, bottom line is that he's inheriting quite a bubble. He's coming into the economy when it is so stoked, it's so overheated, ironically, in part because he got elected. So it's going to be, I don't think he can keep the bubble inflating for much longer. It's already, the stock market is pretty much discounted the best of what it could expect or imagine from Trump. So it's not going to be easy for him, and I just hope that that the stock market crash waits for long enough that he can do a little house cleaning first before he's widely reviled for causing the economy to implode.
Now, you're saying that Bitcoin, which is skyrocketed, and we thought $100,000 was the barrier. You think that it's kind of a barometer of what we can expect?
It is really a perfect analog for speculative fever, and it's a tribute to the sleazeballs who fabricate these stories and spin the market, that they were able to one-up themselves on AI hype. You know, for a while, AI hype was manna for investors. It was going to do everything from change the world to revive the city of San Francisco. San Francisco would be, there'd be hundreds of thousands of people or tens of thousands of high-paying jobs for people in the burgeoning AI field. So the AI hype became so deafening that you have to give the dirtballs who move these markets, who manipulate them, credit for one-upping that story with the Bitcoin story. So Bitcoin is, the story is, well, it's going to become a reserve currency and this and that, but you got to be an imbecile to buy into that story, literally. Because there's a question really as to whether money, you can have money based on some speculative vehicle that fluctuates from, in the case of Bitcoin, a nickel, 5 cents, to a recent high of, I think it was 104,000. So I'm prepared to, I'll concede that Bitcoin has value because it can record a transaction securely, but credit cards do that much better, much more efficiently, and Bitcoin, for it's not used for transactions anyway. It's purely a speculative vehicle. So I'm looking for a target in Bitcoin about 15% higher than where it is right now. I have an exact number, but that's you'll have to come to Rick's Picks and sign up to get the proprietary target. But if Bitcoin is topping, then so the market will be topping as well.
Now, of course, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of cryptocurrencies. And my previous guest on the show mentioned there's even a fart coin now.
Yeah, there's an everything coin. There were 2,000 boutique flavors of Bitcoin when it crashed. It's crashed twice, really. But if you were in one of those small, those boutique cryptocurrencies, and I was, I took a piece of some scam that was, they were selling their own version of cryptocurrency in a Tupperware party format. You would go to some friend's house and there'd be some lady presenting her story about how she's gotten rich just by sticking with it. And it was an interesting scam because it without breaking any rules about making claims about returns, they didn't even call the returns interest rates or yield. They just said that if you, the story that made its way out there was that if you stuck with this cryptocurrency, this boutique flavor, for I think it was 18 months, you would either double or triple your money. But that word money was a lie, because what you were tripling was your initial crap coin stake. So if you bought $3,000 worth of crap coin, you would have $9,000 worth, but you couldn't even, you certainly couldn't cash that out for real money, for dollars. You needed to convert it into a fungible form of crypto. And in this case, the conversion would be into Ethereum, possibly. And before everybody was so fixated on octupling the returns, forget about doubling and tripling, that they didn't cash out. So when the market collapsed, virtually all these little boutique cryptocurrencies were non-negotiable. You couldn't trade them for anything. And it's a credit to the scumballs who ran this scam that they stuck by their guns. They basically, they waited to see whether Bitcoin would make a bottom. And when they thought a bottom was in, they put out they put out the word, a buzz that said, hey, look, don't worry. You're going to get that money back. We promise. And the reason they were able to do that, the reason they did that, was because being scumballs and criminals and scammers, most of these guys were young Asian zillionaires, zillion in cryptocurrency anyway. So they made that offer. They said, don't worry, we'll make you all whole again. You won't come out of this with a loss. They recognized that Bitcoin was going to rally again. They basically had faith that the whole scam would go to new heights. And so they figured, well, as long as we've got a mailing list of 10,000 suckers, let's keep them on the hook with this promise that we'll... So eventually they did, if you put in $3,000 initially, they gave you $3,000 worth of crap coin Roman numeral two. So that's still in play. I don't know. I told the woman who brought me into this thing, I said, look, you can have my crap coin. It's fine. I'll take 50% on a dollar if you want to buy it from me. But she didn't. So anyway, so the guys who ran this scam, they had faith that that Bitcoin would come roaring back, and it paid off. If they were billionaires now, they're billionaires three times over at this point, based on what's happened since. But it was a testimony to these thieves just they were true believers in Bitcoin, and so they made out like bandits.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, is gold struggling here, or is it going to bounce back?
There, Mr. Slammy is in there crushing gold, but it's a fraud. It's just a slap down, a shakedown. And I say that because gold is coming down off a high yesterday that took out two previous peaks. I'm looking at the February COMEX contract, and the little high that it made yesterday was significant because it created a bullish formation on the daily chart, created what I call an impulse leg, meaning the sell-off, as long as it holds above last week's low, which was 26.35, we're currently at 27.08. So if this thing doesn't come down below 26.35, I would look for new all-time highs in gold. The existing high is $2,826. That's basis the February COMEX contract.
What's happening with crude?
It's in a dirge, you know. I don't think crude can really, no matter how much fraudulent activity takes place in the mega manipulated crude oil, the energy markets, they can't manipulate it higher without China being part of the story. You know, China's manufacturing, the health of their manufacturing sector is really what prices crude oil at the margin. So if China is in a wallow, which it is, it undercuts the stories that the powers that be who manipulate energy prices, it undercuts their story. It's very hard to get crude going without China buttressing the story.
China has decided in this looming trade war to limit or cut off supplies of a number of rare earths to the United States. How should you be investing in rare earths right now?
You should be running from them. You know, the story's so obvious, and you're going to create a rare earth bust when users who are really scrap with the higher costs of some of these minerals start figuring out alternatives, and not just alternative minerals, but alternative sources. China's a big producer. It's not the rarer the minerals themselves that are so very rare. The problem from the supply side is that it's expensive to process them. You know, in order to create usable quantities of some rare earth minerals, it requires a big investment, a lot of capital. So that's another source of supply that will be coaxed into existence. The investment will be made so that we can other countries can start producing the same thing that China says it's going to cut off.
How long would it take the U.S.? By the way, Canada has a lot of rare earth deposits as well, and they're starting to be developed. But if there's a tariff war, would Canada cut the U.S. off from those supplies?
No, Canada will never cut the U.S. off from anything. And whatever they threaten because of whatever Trump has threatened, they'll work things out. You know, Canada, there's a lot of mutual benefit in a sound and smooth trading relationship between the U.S. and Canada. And the same goes for Mexico. So I wouldn't get too upset about the whole tariff thing, because Trump is just, that's the way he negotiates. He starts with something that seems ridiculous, but he slowly brings things around so that he can cut a deal.
Tax cuts, are they guaranteed for the U.S.?
That's an interesting question. You know, the ideal would be tax cuts, but only if they're offset by spending cuts. You know, that's the way you do it. And of course, the Biden way, and this is not unique to the Democrats, but the Biden way has been, we've had a lot of easy money, easy credit. And the federal government is now borrowing at the rate of $3 trillion a year. So if there are going to be any more tax cuts, and I think even with an aggressive tax cutter in office like Trump, he's still going to have to cop to the growing necessity of spending cuts. So that's why he tapped Elon Musk and Ramaswamy to initiate those cuts. David Stockman has had a lengthy, I think we're at part 14 now, he calls it a memo to Musk and Ramaswamy on how to make these cuts. And it's been very detailed, initially kind of discouraging, because Stockman's idea began with cutting pretty much every three-letter agency and department that exists. It's like we cut the any government operation that you know of. Stockman was saying, just let's do away with it. And he's really, but with all the cuts, the savings were more like $250 billion by 2029, which is the benchmark year for the cuts that Musk and Ramaswamy seek to make. So when you get right down to it, what has to be cut are the big entitlements, Social Security for one, and there will have to be changes there with the means testing of Social Security benefits. But the one thing that's inescapable is that the baby boomers are going to get not shortchanged. We baby boomers are already getting more health care than we paid for, really. But there's no way that millennials and Gen X and Gen Y are going to be able to pay the medical bills of baby boomers, who more and more are going to be living into their 90s. So it is 100% predictable that there will be huge, let me add a fourth huge, cutbacks in healthcare. We simply can't afford to maintain all us elderly coots, baby boomers, at the level we're being serviced right now. So that's got to happen. If it comes in the context of cutbacks in reimbursement rates and things like that, our healthcare system is about to go down the tubes. I don't see any avoiding that. And they're capital T, are trying to take us into it, like the boil, the frog in the water, that he doesn't really feel it until he's been boiled to death or nearly boiled to death. And we're getting the same thing in medicine now, with, for instance, telemedicine, where you call the doctor and he tells you, he diagnoses you on screen and all that. And that's inferior medical care, but it's being sold as kind of a something we can do well because technology has advanced. Technology is crap, really, in most instances. In healthcare, it means just more drugs without treating root causes. Like pretty much everything we eat right now is poisonous, or it's a carcinogen. That's why we haven't beat cancer. So medical care is just the healthcare delivery system is slowly trying to condition us to think that a phone call and screen diagnostics, that the doctor just sort of checking you out, is okay. It's not. So we're going to see a lot more of that in the years to come.
Of course, a lot of doctors are visits are just for renewing your prescription. Doing that over the phone is a lot more convenient.
Yeah, that's true, and that's quite a franchise. You know, the doctor makes you've got a cough, and you want cough medicine. So the doctor, and this happened to me, the doctor says, well, come in. We can't really write a prescription unless the doctor, he hasn't seen you in a while. And it didn't used to be that way. They could call in a prescription for cough medicine. But in this case, the doctor billed me with what they call level 4. And it meant that when I came in to see him, in this case, it was a she. She took a very detailed patient history record down to family medical history and stuff like that, just for my cough medicine. So she billed the insurer. I think it was a long time ago. It was like $500 for the visit, and then the cough medicine was another $20 or $30. You know, that's definitely a racket, and that's the kind of thing you like to believe will become that scam will be much harder to run with Trump in office, especially with Musk and Ramaswamy just dogtailing every instance of fraud that winds up costing us.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Well, I think the main thing is don't count on this collapse that's coming waiting to happen until after the new year. You know, it would be a big surprise if the market started coming unglued during Santa season. So that's why I'm particularly alert to it. And don't feel bad if you've got to shift money that's been working, making you 40% in the last year into something that will pay you just 4.25%. 4.25% is not bad for risk-free treasury paper. So that's really where you should be, or that you should consider shifting some of your 2024 lucre from being long Nvidia stock and a couple of the other lunatic stocks. You definitely should shift at least a part of it into treasuries.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, thanks much for inviting me on, Jim. It is always a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.